Are we live? We're on Facebook Live here. We are right there, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody say hi to our two winners here from the duels in Detroit, the Detroit Grand Prix, Joseph Newgarden and Scott Dixon. They gave each other the nod.
Yeah.
Did you see that? That was nice. Very
that's
polite.
Very subtle. Very
what's
subtle.
Up? What's up?
Joseph actually didn't even look at me. So.
I didn't, no.
This is going to be obvious.
You guys had, I know everyone's been saying it, you talk about the 180 weekend. You either wreck it or win, man. That was like, I mean, seriously, what happened to you on Saturday?
Yes, yeah.
And then coming back yesterday, and then you, Joseph, Saturday, you covered everybody. You were just gone. I was there, and you were out. And then yesterday, it just happened.
It's kind of a net zero weekend, unfortunately, you know. So that's not terrible, but it's not as good as it could have been. But it's a tough weekend. You know, it's tough to get right. This is a long drag for us after Indianapolis. You know, you've been on the road for 3 weeks constantly just trying to, you know, race and everything else that comes with it. So it's pretty taxing on the crews and everyone. So trying to get through this weekend, it's a real privilege and honor to be up here. And it's a very fun event, but it's just tough. It's tough to get through two races and make sure you maximize it.
Scott, are you okay after Saturday? Because you hit hard. I mean, that was a hard hit that you took.
Yeah, I think it was harder than I thought it was. The next day I kind of woke up with a pretty good headache, and then my wrist actually hurt a little bit, which I'd taken my hands off, you know, before I hit the big impact, but I didn't even really think I'd clipped it that much on the right side. But yeah, it's not, I think for a track that requires a lot of confidence, and then you go straight from that race straight into qualifying for race two, you know, you would kind of like a practice to kind of get back up to speed and, you know, check the car out. So it is what it is. You know, it was a bad mistake on my behalf, and definitely a nice way to turn it around and get a win for the team.
For a lot of people who don't know about racing, you mentioned it's like a long week because you go from Indy and then you come to Detroit and you have two races. A lot of people think you guys just show up at the track and you put on your racing suit, you put your helmet on, you get in the car and go. Kind of walk people through like that whole week, because you're doing all kinds of stuff for media, so what's your day like? Like, how long is an average day for you guys?
Well, Indy's kind of its own thing, right? We start back in March, you know, at St. Pete. But then, you know, Indy, I think the lead-in, you have the Grand Prix. Then you go straight into practicing for 5 or 6 days before you then have 2 days of qualifying. And then you go in, you know, a bit of practice before we get to, you know, media week. And then you're doing media the whole week of Indianapolis, which is kind of the hardest week in motor racing, I think, because you're kind of talking about what you think you're going to do in the race, but you really have no idea. So then you go to that, and then we come here straight away to do media, two races on a weekend, and then we go straight to Texas. You know, it's just a brutal kind of period, but mostly for the team guys and girls, I think, you know, because I actually get to go home after the race and chill out for a couple of days, but they go straight back into work, have to turn these cars around, going from oval setup to road course, and then, you know, to have two races on one weekend and have to rebuild the cars, you know, between races is very tough.
So, and Joseph, for you, it's even more so because this is a home race for Penske. So, I mean, the demands on your time, which is not complaining, it's quite a compliment, but still, there's a lot of demands on your time when you're here in the Motor City.
Yeah, I mean, it's a privilege, though, you know, to drive for Team Penske and Roger. They're just such a, you know, such a fantastic group, and they put on a great event. I mean, Bud Denker and his entire team, and you know, what they've done with the island there and where it's come from and where it is now, it's actually pretty phenomenal. I started racing here back in 2012, and since the Grand Prix came back, and it's really just amazing, the renovations and what they've done to cultivate that island and make it a community place again for people, you know, that feel safe and is inviting. I think it's great. And also just for us as racers, it's nice to have an event there. But yeah, it's a big weekend for us. It's our backyard with Chevrolet, even Hitachi, which is on my car. They have a headquarters here. So it's very important for all of us. And there's a lot of pride that we take being in Detroit as Team Penske to do a good job.
Well, as racing fans, I think Aaron and I were talking about this morning. We appreciate the fact that you owned it yesterday. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like sometimes like we're just fans watching and we're like, okay, somebody's at fault. I mean, something happened. At what point did you know, like, the rear of the car was gone? Like you said, was it just pebbles and you were picking up the pebbles in the inside, or what happened?
Yeah, not till I turned. I actually, the braking point that I had was fine, and it was all under control for the most part. It's just when I went to turn, I just lost rear grip, and you know, my only explanation for it could be that I was on, you know, the dirtiest part of the track. You know, the further over you get to that inside wall on the right, the more debris, the more pickup that you're going to get on the tires, and this track's pretty tough for that. If you get offline here too aggressively, like I did, then you can pick up stuff on your tires that loses grip. So Yeah, it was just an error. I probably should have gone left then right. That's what I said yesterday. It was just a, it was a tough timing situation. You know, for us in that race, we're pushing, we're trying to win. I was fighting Rossi, and the timing with Hinch and him coming across the track, you know, just it led to me having to make a decision, and I chose the wrong decision, essentially.
How do you guys, I don't know, the other thing is, I don't know how you guys, like, you're obviously a five-time champion, you're a champion as well. How do you, everyone goes afterwards, well, he's racing for a championship, he shouldn't have done that. You have like a nanosecond to make that decision, and as race car drivers, I would imagine if you quit thinking about trying to win a race, you're screwed. I mean, then you're not, that edge is what makes you guys who you are on the track.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, it is about decision making. You know, I tell people, you make over 1,000 decisions in a race. You make one wrong one, and it ends your day, you know, or you're going to lose a race. So it's difficult. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, we go back and watch races all the time. I know I do, and I wish I had a redo. You know, I would do something completely different, and I'd make the right decision the next time. But it is hard. You know, all these guys, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for everyone that straps into these race cars. It's tough. I mean, even people that, I was thinking about this last night, even people like rookies that get, you know, ragged on because they make maybe 5 or 6 mistakes throughout a year. It's really not that many, because it's true. You're making so many decisions in a race. And, you know, say you make 5 or 6 wrong decisions. I mean, there's thousands of decisions that you're making. So, you know, you get penalized so big for something so small, and you really do have to be perfect. And a lot of times we try and be that, and we execute and we get it done, but, you know, sometimes we make mistakes.
Same thing for you, Scott, though. Are you thinking big picture in the moment or no?
Well, no, I think you got to treat just each weekend as it is, right? And you got to go for the wins. You know, I think each weekend we go in, the mindset is to try and win the race. You know, I think when you get later in the season, maybe with a race or two to go, and you can kind of see an easy format of how the points are laying out, then you can kind of points race a bit. Or if you have a very large, you know, points lead. But I think when you start to do that, you just get yourself in trouble. You start overthinking things. You know, you start maybe not taking the natural ability or your natural instinct a lot of the time. You'll kind of half pull out of a move. And when you kind of do something by halves, then you get yourself into another awkward position. So, you know, yesterday that move for Joseph could have been the perfect move, you know, had it just altered slightly. You know, right. It's just you're trying to race with yourself, but then also control it around a ton of other people too.
Jim mentioned this. I think there's this misconception, because when you watch on television, it doesn't look like you guys are going as fast as you are. And when you talk about decisions, you don't really have a lot of time to make one when you're going 220 miles an hour.
You know, the best thing to do, I always tell people, you get to go to a race like Detroit, then get up close. The great thing about street course racing, you can get really close to the cars. And I can tell you, when you're there and you're up close, it is scary. It's scary stuff. And I know when I was a kid and I watched Indy cars on street courses, that freaked me out. I honestly was like, there's no way that these guys and girls are able to control these cars in this confined space. It's nuts. I mean, it is so there's a great amount of appreciation I think you can get from going to see a street course race in person. It's one of the great things about this event.
It was a Grandstand 7. I had people coming up to me on Saturday going, oh my God, I'm never sitting anywhere else. So I think we kind of just gave it away. I'm telling you, that was the one. People are coming up to us afterwards. I had a couple listeners coming up afterwards going, dude, you got to go there. That was like the best ever. They said, you guys are, by the way, you know, you don't have to get right next to the wall and turn 8 every time and scare the crap out of us when we're watching it. I don't remember you guys getting that close in the past. Is this something you've just figured out over time, or you feel more confident with the cars?
You got to maximize it.
Yeah. Is that really what it is? I mean, you guys are so competitive front to back. We always say it. There are no back markers in IndyCar anymore.
There's not.
And you've got to be on it.
Thousands of a second. Yeah. You know, that can be the defining moment. So any kind of little bit of inch that you can take is definitely going to help you.
Well, look at Ericsson. At the second time he's on the course, he was a different driver yesterday. Yeah. I mean, getting that kind of experience. It's cool how you guys, it's fun to watch, because you never know race to race and week to week what's going to happen.
Well, the tough thing, you know, going back to your comment of the walls too, what's tough is the grip a lot of the times is as close to the wall as possible, you know, so especially the apex walls, you know, like the deal with Scott, like you have to be within an inch of the wall to have the best grip on the car for the tires. That's where the racing line is. That's where it's the cleanest. So that's why you see us get so close. You know, we're just trying to make the most out of the race car, get the most grip out of it. And it's a game of inches for sure.
We were talking in the studio, we're sitting here, like, they had the Ford versus Ferrari, the trailer came out about Le Mans, but we're sitting here going, like, the IndyCar stories that you can tell. Yeah. If you cast an IndyCar, AJ Foyt, how come no one's done a movie about AJ Foyt's life?
Andretti.
Mario Andretti. I mean, you know.
They just did a small one on they did Mario.
The, yeah. That documentary yeah. that yes, just yeah. came out, which was to. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
But you got to understand, Scott's a movie star now, so he kind of lives in that world.
Okay. No, knows no, those no, definitely people. Not. Definitely. AJ's one would be amazing.
It would be.
That would be.
What about the Unser family?
Yes.
Yeah. Just the crazy stuff
yeah.
they did.
Yeah.
That'd be like a Wild Western with cars, hearing stories about them stealing cars and driving to Pike's Peak at night.
Just Bobby Unser, I think. Exactly. Yeah, would be enough, man. When that guy gets a microphone, you can't get it off him.
So, who plays Chip Ganassi then? I say John Goodman.
I think that's a good one, to be honest.
I don't know.
We can't figure out Penske, though. We're stuck on Roger Penske.
Well, it depends on you talking older Penske or younger Penske, you know? Then you have some more wiggle room.
So, if it's younger Penske, like 60s Penske, good-looking guy.
60s Penske, like Ryan Gosling or something. You know,
nice.
Let's go with that.
Ooh. Today?
You got some brownie points.
Yeah, there you go.
No, well played. Well played. Joe Pesci maybe for today? No, that I'm joking. That would be.
Oh, DiCaprio would make a nice young Penske. But DiCaprio would, you know, kill any role. It'd be awesome.
With his fake South African accent.
Blood Diamond, everyone's still on about that.
That gets Aaron triggered every time. It's like, you are not doing that, man.
I still love that movie, but it is a terrible accent.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Well, you don't get that at all. People want to do a fake New Zealand accent with you, do they, Scott?
Well, you know, it's so sexy, the New Zealand accent. You know, everybody's trying to. I think it was just voted number one in the world, you know?
Was it?
Yeah, New Zealand. No, I don't know.
Boo.
Yeah.
See, my problem is to try to do a New Zealand accent. I sound talking like one of the sharks from Finding Nemo. I go, hello, my name's Bruce. Fish are friends, not food.
The Australian, Australian accent is so much stronger, but I think that's what everybody's go-to. You know, it's the Australian accent.
Are we closer now to racing going back to Australia with IndyCar? I mean, obviously with Roger being involved in over there and, you know, there's just this renewed interest. Bathurst, my God, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, just watch YouTube videos of Bathurst. Yeah. And then obviously with Melbourne and everything else, the cars would work there. Is it just a logistics issue or someone going, we're going to do it, let's go?
It's money, I think.
It's just money.
It's always money.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone's got to pay, right?
So Roger should pay to do it.
It would be nice, yeah.
So other than that one would be a good one. We always talk about going to Spa. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. It's a big track, man.
I'd like to go back to Japan.
Japan? Yeah. Motegi? On the oval?
No, I want to go to Suzuka.
Oh, Suzuka.
We got to figure out how to sort that out.
What about the Roval down in Charlotte? The road course that they set up there.
Yeah.
Could be cool.
They should do it on a cup weekend. I think it'd be fun.
Bring Kyle Busch out there. See what happens.
There we do. Yeah,
anyway, he was kind of grumpy about that. I'm like, who cares? I don't understand why people have to take a shot at one series of racing or another.
I didn't see it.
He just said that he goes, the only IndyCar race that I care about is Indy 500 and the other ones. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to list off Kansas, Chicago, Iowa, one of the 42 races. If you wanted to be a grump, you could fire back at him. But good racing is good racing, no matter what it is. And there's a lot of good racing right now. I would love to see you guys both have the same weekend in Charlotte. That would be amazing.
He has some grumpy days, Carl.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of mutual respect. You know, guys like Jimmy Johnson, they're fantastic. You know, he's a real racer. I think a lot of those guys over there have great respect for us and the same from our side. Yeah. You know, we're both big fans of each other.
Yeah, and I think that's just Kyle being Kyle kind of thing. Yeah. He gets away with that, man. So Texas on Saturday.
Yes.
Right? Saturday
Texas,
night?
Texas, yeah.
Slot car racing, basically.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be... I don't know. They've changed some of the aero configurations for this weekend.
Too, right?
Yeah, new tire. So I think it's going to be a lot of unknowns, which is always good for some really good racing. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Do the rain tires... I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off there.
Keep going with your technical stuff.
You know, like when I'm watching F1, they have intermediate rain tires, right? You guys have one set of rain tires. Is it the same principle, though, that you've got to keep those tires relatively cool? Like, were you guys towards the end of that run... Were you trying to get off into the wet just to keep them? What's it like in the car when those tires start to go?
They just overheat is the thing. You know, they're
so
not,
you lose grip? I mean, what is it?
Yeah,
what's the characteristic in the
car? You know, there's obviously more of a tread block. You know, when we run on slick tires, it's smooth across, so your gauge is consistent, which is the thickness of the actual rubber on the tire. With a rain tire, you have these thicker rubber blocks, so it's deeper. And they're not designed to really be driven in dry conditions. So wet conditions where you're, you know, less speed through a corner, they don't build as much heat. And then when it dries up and you're driving on those tires in dry conditions, they build up so much temperature and they overheat. And then they just start to kind of eat themselves, essentially. It's kind of a funny way to say
they
it,
pop,
but they just fall apart. And when that happens, you just lose grip. And it feels like you're kind of driving on ice, so...
Well, you were having yesterday, you were talking about trying to keep the temperature in your tires as well.
Towards the end of the race. But at the start of the race, it was kind of the same thing on the red tires. Like, it felt like I was driving on wets. You know, it just gets to that point where you overheat it and they start to, you know, really fall apart. And you slow. I think the one lap we slowed down 4 or 5 seconds just on the one lap, and that's what happens. The same in the wet race. You know, before that caution came out, that last lap before the caution, you really feel them fall off, and you just, it almost feels like you've stopped. So it's not fun.
Either one of you ever lose a tire during a race before, like Will did?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You have.
Yeah, I think I have. It's been a while for us, but it happens. They're trying to add, you know, almost 20 gallons of fuel and 4 tires in 6 seconds. So things can go wrong pretty quickly.
Is that one of the scariest things that can happen, though, honestly, when you're out there going that fast?
It normally happens so quickly that you never actually get up to speed. You know, I think Will hadn't even left pit lane before the wheel came off. So, you know, it's obviously not a desired setup that you want to, you know, race with.
But... Or even like a blown tire, you know, like, because you don't really have control at that point. What do you do?
Probably a brake failure, I think, would be more
intimidating.
Yeah. A blown tire, you can... Yeah, it's not fun either, but you can somewhat manage it.
Ryan Hunter Ray had a flat tire at the end of the race, and it wasn't until the red flag came out that he knew he had a flat.
Oh, right.
But when you guys stopped, he said, he looked and went, oh, no. And you lose that, so...
I think we're extremely lucky with Firestone. You know, their safety record is crazy. Yeah. Some other series really struggle with, you know, blowouts and a lot of, you know, crashes that way. So we're extremely lucky, especially, you know, Indianapolis, where in qualifying, you're getting to almost 250 miles an hour going into turn one or turn three. Like, it's super fast. So it definitely builds a lot of confidence for the drivers and all the teams.
I learned something over the weekend. I never heard this before, that it had the connection with the Indianapolis 500 and Detroit, obviously other than the car thing. The reason that racetrack was built was a test track because Indianapolis wanted to be the automotive headquarters of the world way back in 1909, and they were competing with Detroit. Yeah. So the guy who bought the land wanted to build a 5-mile track, and it was going to be a test track. And then when they brought in the engineers, they go, well, you don't have enough land. He's like, well, I want a 3-mile oval, like the one they built in England back then. They go, well, we don't have enough for that. He goes, well, what if I give you a rectangle and it's 2.5 miles? He goes, that'll work. So that's what it was a dirt test track, and they were trying to get car manufacturers to move to Indianapolis to build their cars there.
Wow.
But we got Ford. We have, you know, obviously what became, you know, Lewis Chevrolet, but General Motors and everything, and the Great Lakes and stuff. Uh-huh. So that was it. But I never knew that till this weekend, that it was a test track.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Thank you.
So there is that little bit of connection, even between the Indy 500 and Detroit, that goes back 100 years.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah. A lot of history.
They did try to race on that. They raced dirt bikes, or back then, I guess, bikes on dirt.
It's an amazing facility. There's a really cool core sample photo for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway where they, you know, pull the whole sample out of the ground, and you can see just the layers of the track and the way it's evolved from bricks, you know, all the way up through the different pavements that they've put on. It's amazing looking. It's probably a foot and a half deep or something, but it's a really cool photo.
There is a similarity between, I mean, look what Roger and what the folks have done here to bring racing back to Detroit and how it's evolving. And then after World War II, there was a period where Indy wasn't, it was abandoned. It just sat there.
Yeah.
And the guy's name totally eludes me now, but Holt. How they came in and rebuilt the whole thing. There's great pictures, like the old pagoda was made of wood.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm not going up there. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
But yeah, the Indy car racing, you guys are, it's, you've got to feel it, because we talk about it more than we ever have. You've got to feel it as a series that it's just building. Right, don't you? I mean, with fans' response and stuff and social media and how people are taking notice of the series more than ever.
Man, it's been awesome. It's really, really, really has. I think NBC has done a great job. They've really pushed and promoted the sport and helped with cross-promotion and just, you know, revitalizing the enthusiasm of it. But the sport itself, I think, you know, we really rest on the fact that we produce great racing, you know, naturally and organically. It's just it's a very competitive atmosphere. There's a lot of parity within the sport, which, you know, creates a lot of excitement. You know, we would like to show up and kind of understand that we're going to win every race because we're the best team. But the reality of it is there's a lot of great teams. There's just a ton of great competitors and a lot of talented people. And it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen in our races. As soon as you think you can predict it, it completely changes. So it's just a fantastic atmosphere and competition level that we have right now.
It's fun. It's fun to watch. It's fun to go to.
One of the things I heard all weekend long was just about, you mentioned the talent, the level of talent, the diversity of talent from different countries. And then, of course, this weekend, it was kind of cool because when you had a ticket, you could go watch the team setting up the cars and maybe see like you guys coming out of your trailers. And what was that like for you guys? Because that's kind of a new feature for this, to just have the fans be so accessible to you and vice versa.
Yeah, I think the IndyCar series has always been very well known for its openness, you know, and you know, fan kind of appreciation with, you know, whether it's the autograph sessions and the access. I think it is one of the best parts is that you can pretty much get everywhere and see everything, whereas a lot of other sports, you know, you just don't have that, you know, or even motor racing, you know, you just can't get there. So it is definitely a special part, and I think when you do talk to the fans and that's definitely what they love, you know, it's great to see.
Let me ask you guys a question. Fernando Alonso not making the Indy 500.
Oh.
Short-term failure, obviously, in McLaren. Long-term gain for the sport, do you think? I think it's a long-term gain for IndyCar because it shows you can't just come over here and race. You have to have your act together, especially at a place like that. Is that fair? I mean, it reflected poorly on McLaren, but I thought it reflected well on the series, saying you can't just come over here and bring a car. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I was definitely bummed for Fernando. I would have much preferred that he was in the race.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it does show. I think it was just one of those weak links, whereas a much more established team, you know, had they not had the accident, I think, early in the week, they probably would have been okay. You know, it's just that once that happened, it caused a chain reaction of messiness. They didn't know what they needed to do. They kind of lost track. You know, the other car wasn't even prepared. You know, and that's where it shows, I think, the depth of a lot of these teams and the process that it takes. And it's not one or two big things. It's hundreds of small things that equate to the speed that you have, and they just hadn't done it. So it, I think it was good in the sense that you're talking, that it shows that, you know, the level of what it takes to
right.
do it properly, even though you're going up against a global entity of McLaren that, you know, spends, you know, $200-300 million a year just on their Formula One program. So they'll be back. It will definitely make them stronger, and it'll be interesting to see how next year goes.
Oh, I just figured out something. Another one. Dan Gurney, Ryan Gosling. That would be a better. I think Ryan Gosling as Dan Gurney would be a good one.
Yeah,
that's
a good
another
shout.
One.
That's a very good shout.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. You guys are great, man. I mean, it was an absolute. DetroitGP.com is the website, obviously, for everything.
Yes.
And the thousands of volunteers. I don't know. We're partial because we're here, but they're just like the nicest group of people in the world.
They are.
Dude, 100%. You
know? Everybody's in a good mood. Even when we had to clear the track on Saturday, they're all like, come on. Everything was so cool and calm, and they just brought everybody out of
there. Everybody's happy.
It's amazing. Nice. It could be snowing. It could be, you know, there could be.
Well, don't go that far.
Yeah. It's Michigan. Wait
5 days. It could be the worst conditions imaginable. And they'd be there so happy greeting people. Yeah. It's amazing.
Man, it's so cool you guys came in here. And I know it's been a crazy weekend. Good luck in Texas, Joseph Newgarden, Scott Dixon. Are we in a Laguna Seca this year, right?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
That's final race.
So who's going to be in front of when you drop down to the corkscrew in the last lap?
Well, hopefully we're not close.
Yeah.
You know?
Full
of gap.
Dude, I can't even play that on a video game without dumping somebody. I can't imagine even trying it in real life. When's the last time you guys were there? Did you test out there and all? Or
We tested
earlier in the year. It's funny, that corner. It's not, when you drive it, it's actually not.
It's not as fun as it looks.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Oh, come on. Well, we think that's like the coolest thing. Every time I only play Laguna Seca on my game just so I can drive that. It's really.
It looks amazing. I mean, and it is fun to watch. But it's not as fun as you would think to drive.
It doesn't feel like there's much drop. I don't know.
What if we spray like a garden hose or something out there when you guys come into it?
There you go.
Like the old
if you
cart
go
drifting.
Faster, maybe it'd be cooler, I think. If it was like a second or third gear corner, maybe with that drop, it would be kind of fun.
But yeah,
it's kind of slow.
It's kind of an awkward drop.
Yeah.
You know, you get there and you're like
kind of looking.
You know, you arrive so much slower than you think, and the way the car drops is so awkward. It just doesn't feel natural for some reason. So it's not some like there's not some big adrenaline rush with it.
I got to ask you guys, Honda and Chevrolet here, if you could have one production car right now in the world, anywhere in the world, and I'm going to put you on the spot, what do you want?
Camaro ZL1-1LE.
Wow, that was a fast response.
It's in my car. It's in my
garage.
Is
it the ragtop or the hardtop?
Hardtop.
You don't like the new ragtop?
You can't get the 1LE in anything other than the hardtop.
Okay, but they do have the ZL1 and the convertible now, I think.
You're correct. Correct.
Okay,
yeah, but
okay.
The 1LE was like the supercar version.
Please say NSX. Anyway.
Well, yes, the NSX is good. I like my MDX. My hybrid MDX is very nice. I just got the Ford GT, too, because I do the GT program.
Yeah, you do.
For Ford. But the Ford GTs, that's a sexy looking car.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. I've got an i8 out in the parking lot. We can go mess around with that for a little bit.
Go.
Yeah, it's not mine. Did you notice how I kind of like had to qualify
he's like,
that?
They're
like, yeah, the guy in Trister Radios drive one of those. No, we're not.
We'll just all go race our supercars down the street here.
We'll do it, man. Road course. Joseph, Scott, thank you so much for the time coming in.
So
you guys
Thank
again
you.
DetroitGP.com. Bye to everybody on Facebook. Thanks, guys.
There it is.
Right there, the red light. Yeah. We're
wow.
Yeah.
They were watching us the whole time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.